Welcome. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Yes, tonight's another great show dealing with metaphysics, spirituality, science, and a number of other subjects. Sometimes you throw them into. And if you haven't heard about this show before, well, welcome. In either case, if you've been here before, we're going to deal with a subject I've talked about in prior shows, sometimes just as an adjunct to what I was referring to in the show at that time. I've had one or two shows that were just about this specific subject. And in addition, I've never had a show that would deal with the subject that we're going to deal with in its entirety, the way we're going to deal with it tonight, and that's glamour, the astral illusion. Glamour, the astral illusion. And why haven't we gone so deep before? Well, you know, I think that some of our listeners now have a better understanding, and it's easier for us to go deeper. Also, for those people who are new or haven't heard it before, this may be an opportunity to give them a chance to also go and listen to prior shows about this subject, and they can do that as well. So we've got the prior shows they can listen to. We've got those people who say, well, I want to hear even more about it. Well, then that's what we're going to do. So what is glamour? It sounds like, I thought, you know, a lot of people think, well, glamour, isn't that what people do when they go to a salon or have some kind of maybe surgery? Or is that what Hollywood's all about in some parts of other industries? Isn't it supposed to be something about our appearances and how others look at us, how we project an image of ourselves to others? That's getting closer, yeah. But glamour is the astral illusion. And let me tell you what an illusion is. An illusion is a misperception of sense or senses within a particular body, and the corresponding then failure to think in a way which is enlightening or along spiritual or God's thinking. So, if you can understand what I just said, glamour is a falsehood. It's part of people convincing themselves and operating in ways that is against the thought of their creator and ultimately leads to the destruction and eventual death of the body that the glamour appears in, the illusion appears in, I should say. And in the case of the kind of illusion that is in the astral body, it causes the astral body to become damaged and eventually to die. So if you didn't have these illusions, you wouldn't have the damages that occur to a particular body, and eventually that body would not die of the damages. Now, death could occur in other ways, but from the damages itself, that wouldn't happen. And most people, what most people call aging, is caused by illusion. So when we talk about aging, it's really related in most cases to these illusions. Again, glamour is the illusion of the astral body. All right. So that was pretty simple, right? We have a working definition. You know how I like to talk about definitions right at the beginning of the show. And most people have large amounts of glamour. As a matter of fact, there is a huge amount of glamour in a lot of people. So it's not a small amount. And sometimes people are aware of the glamour. So glamour can be more likely felt by someone after it has, in a prolonged sense, been in the astral body, then is in other cases, the illusion in, let's say, the mental body, or the illusion that is in the etheric physical body. The etheric physical body, just for reference sake, is called the glamour that is in, the illusion that is in the etheric body is called Maya. Maya. And the glamour, the illusion that is in the mental body is referred to as egotism and or arrogance. Those are the illusions that can be found there. These illusions actually can be seen, and they're an actual thing. A lot of people think they're some kind of name for a behavior or a sensation, but it's not that they actually can see. If you were looking at the illusion in the etheric, quote-unquote, physical body, but it only can be seen in the etheric body itself, because the effects are only noticed in the physical body, which is the aging process, wrinkling of skin and all that terrible stuff, loss of vision, changes in definition of the body, etc. But the ability to sense Maya is limited because Maya causes like a smothering effect on the senses to the point where the senses decline so rapidly that people aren't oftentimes even significantly aware that they have it. Well, at least not in any major amounts. And for the mental body, illusion that's in the mental body is so slightly affecting people's thought on an average from one day to the next that people seldom notice that. So even a very arrogant person may still appear to themselves to be thinking quite well and not notice the fact that they're causing a lot of damage. The damage in the mental body caused by the illusion there is like a wall of mental energy surrounding centers. And it begins that way, and it blocks out thought instead of allowing thought to enter the center so that we could understand the thought of others, which is what mental senses are about. But when it gets really bad, some of this energy that's around the mental body actually falls into the mental body, and it becomes encased and part of the mental sense. That's when it becomes arrogance, because then that mental sense can no longer join with any other mental sense. And the person is many times clueless to the level that they had been egotistical and clueless about anybody else's thought to the point where they don't even care about other people's thought because they don't know it even exists in their frame of reference. So those two bodies have a very different kind of experience in illusion than the astral body has, because the astral body is the body where we can most feel the illusion in it. So if you have a lot of glamour, and most people have quite a bit of it, the feeling of the illusion of glamour is a feeling of anxiety and of tension in the astral body, which sometimes relates to and becomes tension in the physical body over time. It travels interdimensionally into the etheric, and eventually that affects the physical body. So you get a lot of movement that is, this is what anxiety is, a lot of movement that is quite uncoordinated and one would call it frenetic. And the movement itself becomes a barrier between energy moving from one center to the other because it gets jiggled up by trying to go from one center to the other and join the centers enough so that we can sense in a more full and therefore complete way. It blocks the completeness of our senses in an immediate sense. It eventually destroys the senses, but it first starts out by blocking. So when we have these things called glamours, that's what's going on in the astral body. Now, you might be asking yourself, okay, oh, that's kind of interesting, but what the heck is a glamour? Okay. You kind of described the Maya body, Maya in the etheric body is this kind of darkened energy it is that just was like a blanket, literally, on the body and just deadens the senses. Whereas glamour doesn't exactly do that. It prevents energy from moving very well from one center to another. And you need to understand this, that the dimensionality of the astral world is what causes this difference. All these illusions are actually just the same thing. They're the perception of God, and that leads to the illusion. But in the astral body, because there's a fourth dimensional aspect to astral energy, a lot of people think it's time, but time is something else. The fourth dimension is the direction of the energy from one part or one thing to another. That's an actual dimensional part of space, which doesn't exist in the three-dimensional part of the universe that we are directly aware of most of the time while we're physically alive. People in the astral world are directly aware of this other dimensional aspect to themselves. And it is part of their astral body and quite apparent. So when illusion attacks the astral body, it attacks the dimensionality of the fourth dimension the most. And it leads to an inability for the energy to accurately move from one center to the other. And it just literally goes all over the astral body, but it doesn't go into the center. This causes the astral body to become discordantly, vibrationally, we'll say screwball, and just is randomly, chaotically vibrating, instead of there being a meaningful communication from one center to the next, the way it usually works. And that leads to a lot of misperception. So instead of having feelings, that we call feelings, yes, that's what astral sense is, feelings, that are accurate, coming from our experiences. The feelings are contaminated by anxieties. Some people call them exaggerations of fear, but it isn't really fear. It's a sense of anxiety. And a general mistaken and diminished ability to feel accurately what's going on around us from others. And about others, and sometimes the others are not necessarily human beings, but other things even can invoke some level of feeling resonant to ourselves. This is fascinating because when you think about it, therefore, glamour is really contaminating in a kind of gross way the astral body, more than Maya does in any minute of time, say, or egotism, and arrogance does in the mental body. So this is a real bad condition because it can be pervasive, it can be sustaining, it has a lot of negative factors to it, and it affects us while we're both physically alive and astrally alive. Now, it doesn't affect us once we are dead from the astral world, don't have an astral body anymore, and we are mentally alive, it does not affect us any longer there. That's good news, because if it did, it would screw up mental life a lot, just as much as it does the astral. But it does mess up our etheric physical life, because we still have these feelings. They aren't as dominant. We don't live in that extra dimension that we perceive, because our consciousness is focused where we live, and it's focus in the physical dimension, so we don't perceive much about the astral dimension, and we don't notice this energy being thwarted in its movement from one center to another, and the consequence of anxiety being developed. So this anxiety that comes from glamour is almost unnoticeable for a lot of the time in people's lives while they're physically alive. Some people do notice it at times, and some people notice it most of the time. But that's not the usual. All right, so that's a fascinating issue. And you might say, well, how come, since you've talked about this subject before, you've never told us about that? That sounds like it's important to know. Well, I'm going to tell you a lot of things I haven't really completely told you about in the past, because some things just take so long to explain that, you know, I didn't have two-hour shows if we go back years ago. And it's very difficult to get to these levels of explanation of things in less than an hour. There's just not enough time, particularly considering that there are new people listening frequently. And those people don't have a clue what I'm talking about. And then they won't be listening again if that's the case. So I don't want those people to feel frustrated in trying to listen to a show about something that's so far out there that they can't put it all together and make sense of it. And that's why you need more time. And you can't do it consecutively from one week to the next because you get different people listening. And people just don't retain and remember that much from one week to the next, so it's very difficult. So I'm giving some excuses why I haven't told you all this before at this level. And this is going to be true of a lot of shows as time goes by, assuming I'm still here and talking to you guys, that it takes some maturing of the audience and also maybe myself, who knows, and the ability to go back to other shows and re-listen to those older shows that has the more basic information to them to be able to get to this kind of stuff on the radio. Now, yes, if we were in a classroom, we could have feedback and questions, and there is a lot more time developed, and there's less time maybe between get-togethers and other things. It would go a lot better. But that's a different venue. All right, shall we continue? Astral energy has another interesting property to it. And most people, again, aren't necessarily aware of this until they're actually astrally alive. And they kind of miss the point while they're physically alive. And that is that astral energy is much more ephemeral. It doesn't have the definiteness to itself because of a thing called a change in the quantum constant, a change in the physics of it. It's more fuzzy. It doesn't have, you can't say it's here or there. It could be in more than one place, technically, at the same time. That's somewhat true of physical energy, but we don't notice it because it doesn't happen very often to our senses. But in astral energy, it does. And this causes a lot of other issues when you're dealing with astral illusion, because astral illusion is composed of astral energy, okay? And as most people are aware, that when you set something in motion in the physical world, it tends to run down rather quickly, even though it wants to keep going in its initial, we'll say, state, because there is an atrophying of the energy rather rapidly due to a factor of, we'll say, friction, changing the inertial issues of energy. And it makes the energy slow down, and it doesn't maintain accurately its original posture. Astral energy is not like that. As a matter of fact, once you set it in motion, it could be years before it slows down in comparison to minutes or seconds in the physical sense. Even when we're talking about etheric energy, minutes to hours is about what the most you're going to get out of movement and energy that's etheric in the etheric body, as an example. But the astral body could be days, weeks, months, and in rare circumstances, years before it tends to slow down. Now, what does that mean? Well, what the heck is a glamour? Again, I'll bring that question up. And once I answer it, you're going to see what the problem is with glamours. glamour is where a person sets in motion energy that doesn't exactly move from one center to another. It literally goes into the astral body itself, goes back into a part of the originating center that you sensed with, comes back out again, and comes back out in a changed form. Because in its original form, it was a feeling about specifically something that you sensed, and that feeling was inaccurate. Then, when you attempted to send that feeling in its inaccurate state to another center or centers so that it could be checked on and further, we'll say, modified, changed, or in some way assimilated with the other feelings that you may have, it doesn't do that. It enters in and out of the astral body and goes sometimes back into the sense, creating its own kind of reaction to itself. And over time, this reaction, this mirroring reaction to itself, it actually takes on its own existence. Astral glamours are actually things. Like, think of them as almost like bugs, but they're not really. They're kind of alive in a sense, and they can last for months or years without even being re-stimulated, because once set in motion, they just go back and forth and back and forth, and sometimes they can be in both places or more than two places at the same time. They may appear in half a dozen places. The same glamour can appear in half a dozen places in the astral body, but not in the correct center. All at the same time, it is actually possible for that to take place, depending upon the intensity of the glamour, and we'll talk about what causes this intensity in a few minutes, and how many times it's been felt wrongly. It produces some very, very strange effects, things that in our sense of science we wouldn't even think is possible, although if you're into quantum physics, some of this stuff you're going to be saying, well, wait a second, that's a... And you're going to be, you know, saying, well, yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Yeah, that's true. In quantum physics, if you are into some of the more esoteric elements of it, it starts to make a lot of sense. But for the rest of us, this is really about the effects on the astral body and the damage that is caused, the problems that we have, and of course later in the soul, how to solve these problems and live a life that is reduced in glamour, if not glamour-free eventually. So this is a pretty interesting idea if you think about it. All right, glamour. It causes these weird kinds of things to develop. And when we talk about glamours that exist within the astral body, they are actual kinds of things. You can see them wiggling in and out of a center, moving about the astral body, and sometimes appearing in several different places at the same time. You can see what I'm telling you if you were in the astral world and in a place where people had pretty strong glamours, including your own. You can see it. Tell me that isn't something. And so what I'm saying to you is not some theoretical observation, or non-observation, but calculation. It is based upon experience and observation in doing some astral traveling and seeing my own and many other people's astral bodies with different glamours. It's actually a thing of sorts. Now, the thing is still illusionary, so how much you want to call it something real is probably based upon one's opinion more than anything else. But I like to think of it as a thing because it is a little easier then to discuss it and how we're going to try to get rid of it. But it may not actually be accurate enough to use that language when we get to the very most esoteric parts of trying to describe how to deal with and what is, etc., glamour. glamour is energy that is all wound up and doing some pretty strange things because it's in another dimension that has an extra dimensionality to it, but that extra dimensionality isn't working very well. And because of a quantum physical change in the way that energy responds, there is a factor called the quantum constant, which allows the energy to actually be more fuzzy and more capable of being in more than one place at the same time. And its movement can be more, become more chaotic and random when it isn't in the direction of light, God's thought, and instead is following the thoughts of us and or of some being. And the thought in the astral world is not like thought in the mental world. Most people think thought is thinking in mental terms. Whereas astral thought is, which is affecting and controlling to some extent astral energy. Because energy follows thought greater than its own. That's another quantum physics issue if you're into esoteric elements of it. And the interesting part about this is the thought that we're talking about is creative imagination. Yeah. Now, a lot of people say, well, what's the difference between creative imagination and imagination? Because you're using two words instead of one. Okay, well, let's talk about that for a second. Imagination could be literally, in a sense, remembering the picture of something that you've thought of before. That's relatively non-creative imagination because you didn't create it at the moment. Creative imagination is more at the moment because it's more in the present, and includes a large portion of the time frame of being in the present moment. And it means that at the moment we're using our imagination to picture something, people will call it a picture, in our astral mind that is relatively new to us. If we're mostly in the past, and that's possible in the astral world, to be either mostly in the past, to be equally in the past and present, or mostly in the present. If you're mostly in the past, then you have relatively non-creative imagination. And then the astral thought you have is thought you have from a long time ago, or from some time before that time. And therefore, it's a creative to the same level that creative imagination is if it's some way balanced with the present time zone. So imagination could be either. One is more creative and one is definitely far less creative. Creative imagination tends to cause thoughts that are strongly influential over astral energy and especially glamours. So if you're creative in your imagination, it's going to have more of a provocative effect on things like glamours. If you're not creative in your imagination, glamours can stick around more, and it doesn't have much of an effect. Our imagination has very little effect on the glamour, so the glamour is kind of like, just does its own thing, but it does feed it energy. It's like feeding the existing energy more energy, especially when we continue to use our senses in the same illusion way that we used them in the first place to create the glamour. Okay, so the senses cause the creation of the glamour, but the thing that energizes the glamour is our imagination. If it's creative, it puts a lot of energy into it, but most people, after they create glamours, don't use a lot of creative imagination anymore. They just keep using imagination for things they imagined in the past. That kind of screws up their time zones on their thinking, so that instead of being balanced between the past and the present, which is most of the time that's available that people can think in the astral world, very little in the future, by the way, instead of having a balance, they tend to have an exaggeration of the past and a minimization of the present. That's what starts happening when people aren't creative with their imagination, with their glamorous list. Kind of interesting stuff. And that's a little hard to follow, but if you think about it, it may make some sense. And for those of you who are listening to other shows, it might then make some sense about what I mean when I say that the astral world is mostly in time frame about the past and the present, and not too much, not very much at all about the future. It's almost missing in the astral world because we don't have a sense of it. If you can't sense something, it's for sure not going to do very much good for you, because sense is what gives things reality to us. Those things we cannot sense, we can only, in some ways, attempt to believe in, think about, including imagine about, because imagination is one type of thought. And it's very nebulous, because we don't have that direct experience. Direct experience is very important. Sense is very important, because spirit requires direct experience in order for it to grow in its consciousness, which grows it more towards its creator. Spirit has to do that, and spirit, therefore, has to have a body with senses, and usually a brain in the more advanced life forms, that holds the energy in a part of the body so spirit can look at it more consistently and whenever it chooses to, rather than at the moment. And this is very important, because then spirit has this great opportunity to become more a part of its creator. And that's what it's all about. Pretty interesting stuff. I love that idea. All right, so glamour is not about God's thought. It's about the opposite of God's thought. It's non-spiritual. It's unspiritual. And it goes against the thought of spirit to have glamour. Glamour comes about because we're sensing in ways that are illusion, and that leads to a darkness within. It reduces light or enlightenment of the body. In this case, we're talking about the astral body. So it's a fascinating tool to have as this definition about glamour, the idea that creative imagination is both a cause in some cases of glamour, but regular or non-creative imagination is usually its sustaining element. And it causes an imbalance in the astral body to be concerned about its sense of time, mostly for the past, without a balance with the present sense. Wow. I think this is pretty cool stuff. Now, I don't know how cool you think it is, because this is getting pretty advanced. This is about talking, now we're talking about time, we're talking about time as experience, or about. But that's why it's, when you bring these together, I think it gives a more full explanation of something that people take for granted. Like, oh yeah, I know about glamour, it's just this or that, and they have about three or four sentences of explanation. But do they really understand it? No. They have some knowledge about it, but the knowledge hasn't led to a complete enough understanding so they can apply it to all the things that are helpful in how to deal with limiting glamour, and eventually eliminate glamour. Yeah. All right, what are some of the ways that we get glamoured? Well, it depends upon what sense, the primary sense which is being used, and therefore in illusion or abused, is creating the glamour. There usually is a primary sense, and sometimes there are secondary senses. And here's another part of the puzzle. Sometimes a glamour becomes connected to other glamours that weren't originally from the sense that glamour was produced. Glamours can join each other in illogical and sometimes confusing and certainly chaotic means to produce real confusions in how we feel about things, so that our feelings are virtually unknown to even ourselves. If we have a lot of glamours that are interconnected, our sense of feeling, astral sense, is so diminished that we become astrally almost senseless. Now, this condition happens more often in men than women because men have weaker senses in the astral body than women on an average. Why is that? Because the energy in the astral body moves counterclockwise, which is in the tense of esoteric subjects is feminine. What does that mean? Feminine. Well, it has to do just what direction the centers have to be moving in to produce what we subjectively call feminine or femininity. Therefore, people who are feminine, women, have a stronger sense of astral energy natively, just by the fact they are women, than men do, because their bodies are the spin within their centers. Is in somewhat the opposite direction caused by the main center that has an effect on spinning their centers, and that has to do with the sexual center. The dominant center in the astral body is the lowest or most, we'll call it dense energy, the astral center. I mean the sexual center. However, even though this is the case, even though that men do have this definite weakness, we'll call it, it's somewhat countered by the fact that the astral body doesn't respond as much to the sexual center in some circumstances because that's seventh-ray energy, and the astral body is most attuned to sixth-ray energy. So, this is going to sound a little odd, but men don't feel as strongly as women. But when women do feel, they're more apt to feel in more illusioned ways than men are, because the stronger sense, when it's illusioned, causes them to develop stronger glamours than men may have. And that, therefore, the two sexes are about equal in the amount of distortion that they have, but in very different ways from each other. That's a little confusing, isn't it? I know. That's one of those technical things that's so hard for us to really have a grasp on. All right, so looking at it from that standpoint, men just don't feel as strong, but they don't have as strong confused feelings. So there's almost like a balance between those two, and so both sexes have an equal amount of problems in terms of their astral illusion, but in different ways. That's the bottom line, which will make a lot of sense when we talk about how to try to undo all this mess. Okay. So let's take a look at another highly technical problem with astral energy. Since feeling is really what the astral energy is that we're talking about, this thing we call feelings, when people are feeling in wrong ways about things, which happens all the time, and it produces glamours, and it also is caused by glamours. So the cause and effect of glamours is all happening at the same time. This is really confusing to most people, and it makes it most difficult to get a handle on what it is that's taking place within this, when the cause is also the effect and vice versa, in the astral sense, because it's kind of messed up. It's not really, but it seems that way, because if we think too much of our feelings, that's how much, based upon our feelings, and those feelings are glamoured, then we get confused about the whole issue. So the one way to kind of resolve this is to look at it from this standpoint. While glamours have their own little nature to them, their own life to themselves, they are still dictated to and from the senses in our astral body. And at any particular time, we have the choice through both creative imagination and by joining it with clearer, wise, loving thought from the mental body, we can make our astral body more clear, less affected by these, we'll call them goofy feelings, sometimes they're very negative feelings, and change those into very loving feelings that have within them, by nature, a glamour-reducing property. Not necessarily glamour-destroying. It's a whole other thing. We'll talk about that in the next segment. But definitely we can reduce our glamours by employing more clarity in our both astral creative imagination and connected correctly, at least, to clear, loving, and wise mental thinking. That's a great plan. We're going to talk more about how we can get to that plan in about 2.5 minutes or so from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We are back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Just found out that there was some crackling on the line. So the station called me back, and it seems like the line is clearer now. They can do that. Also, if you were trying to get on Skype at the beginning of the show, some people were having trouble. From what I heard, there's many people on the West Coast due to some storms that had some interference or something. I don't know if it's from that or not, but you might try again if that's your preferred way of listening. But you would only know that if you were on the Internet, because if you couldn't get on Skype, that's part of the problem. And of course, this is a technology that's still in its infancy, so how well it works at the time, I don't know. I'm not sure I understand how it works. All right, so getting back to glamours and the astral illusion of that body, let me further explain that astral energy is kind of way goofier than anything we're used to. It's almost like alive in its sense, because all of the astral world is created from the thought of something else that's there. If you were to remove all of the life that comes from some other source, and I'll explain the sources in a few minutes, in the astral world would become virtually non-existent, literally. So this means that astral energy is dependent upon something else having an effect on it, and for the most part, that something else is spirit and the thought of spirit, along with sometimes the thought of souls and other higher beings that enliven life and give life the ability to exist in the astral world. So it's kind of a little confusing to us because we like to think of things as being very definite and really right there. But the astral world in and of itself is created from creative imagination of so many things that it collectively comes together and creates this world. Now, technically, dimensionally, the world would be there, but it wouldn't be much of a world without there being creative imagination and without there being life that exists in other realms being part of the process. It's so so hard for us to get that because it doesn't match our experiences from the world we physically live in. And it's hard for us to understand that mostly what we think of as the world around us is really created by thought coming from so many different beings coming together to produce the effects that we believe we experience. This has a whole wider meaning in terms of the universe in total. And it means that truly energy is following thought, and thought, which is in God's direction, is what is the controlling element to producing everything in the universe. When we say God created the universe, God created life and let life create the universe through its own different means and different ways of thinking. And really, that's the better way of explaining it. And so what we experience so much is a reflection of the collection of life thinking within the universe. And this is so different than the present-day physics trying to explain what the universe is like, because that from the physicist sense, it would be a universe which is there whether or not life is there or not. And from what I just explained, I think you can say that there isn't any universe, at least as we understand it to be, unless there is the thought of life, in vast different ways and in different levels of thinking and different time perspectives as well, as I explained in the astral world, so that life then becomes tremendously animated and the world that it creates is almost infinitely complex and comes from a creative element rather than from a random thing kind of element, because the randomness is not there at all. Thought has purpose in it because that's the first part of God's mind. Thought has directed purpose in it because that's the second part of God's mind. And thought has to change the field that it exists in so that other thought is affected by it. And that's kind of the third part of God's mind in terms of activity or intelligent activity. So when you think about what I just said, thought is far more what everything is based upon than some kind of physics about energy. Energy is part of the equation, but it's only the minor part. You take out the thought, and particularly spiritual thought, and you don't have a universe at all. And physics doesn't make any sense at all. Voila. Just the way we presently have it today. It's a bunch of different theories that contradict each other mathematically, aren't supported at in the end of their existence, and or beginning, and it just doesn't make any sense. Well, that's because it doesn't. It doesn't come from what it starts out in the first place to believe it is. And that's because people don't want to believe in spirits or spiritual issues. Spirit being the thought of God, of course. Wow. Just thought I'd throw that in there, you know. What the heck? And so many people that I meet want to have an explanation about thought as being separate from and not part of their daily experience. Yeah. You can see why that doesn't add up. Okay. And so, they want an objective reality. The objective reality is it's just an empty canvas. And the real reality is the paint and what you see and what the composition is and the meaning behind it comes from the creation of life through thought. All right, so in the astral world, this is much more apparent. I can remember. I'm going to tell you this in an experiential sense. This is not to toot my own horn, at least I hope not. When I first went into an isolation thing, sensory isolation thing, and this is a really, really good one, happened to be made for experimental purposes in an institute that was doing studies in consciousness. Noetics was the name of it, studying noetics. Although it was a psychological institute, but they're all kind of the same thing. And my experiences were at first confusing to myself. And after the first time or two I went into the tank, I mostly had astral experiences, but I occasionally would have an etheric experience. And I just didn't have any mental dimensional experiences while conscious, while in the tank, because I wasn't conscious enough to do that. But going to the astral world, the thing that I found most, we'll say fascinating, was what I just talked about, which is that this is a reflection of each person's own dynamic thinking processes in terms of their creative imagination. And the more someone exercises it, the more the astral world seems vividly alive to them and interactive. And if one were to remove oneself from the populations that exist in the astral world of living beings, and it's not too hard to do, by the way, to go to a place where there's virtually no living things at all, the astral world starts to disappear unless you operate your own creative imagination. I did some experiments with that to see what would happen. It was a little disconcerting and frightening. Now, let me try to describe it to you so that, and again, this is my experience. Someone else might have something different because it's still going through the filters of my own senses, astrally speaking. But I decided as an experiment, I did this pretty darn early, maybe the first or second, well, maybe a third time as an astral world. Long time ago, it's hard to remember. I decided to see what it would be like if I put myself in a place where there was nothing else alive around me. And at the same time, I tried to regulate my own thoughts so I didn't creatively imagine anything about my surroundings. And it takes a little bit of practice to do that, but I was able to do it. And what happened was the following. At first, I arrived at a place that there was very little of anything, and it was almost worse than a moonscape type thing. But there are still things in a moonscape, and there's still like ground, and there's still like sky of some sort. So then I tried to cut my own imagination down to the most minimal levels possible. I'm still in the astral world, and I was in a subdimension of the astral world, particularly at that time. I was in the sixth subworld, away from everyone else around me. Luckily, by the way. And so, within a few minutes of this, we'll call it negative, kind of non-thinking kind of thing, try to eliminate thought in my creative imagination. I was still thinking mentally, but not creatively imaginatively. and not imagining anything from my past thought either. So I didn't have any imagination going on, and there was no one else perceivably or no life perceivably anywhere around me. The ground started to literally disappear. The sky and the ground melded together into one, like, sphere. I was, like, entombed inside a sphere of some unknown thing. And the sphere started to disappear, in which case I was suspended in a kind of weightless state, almost like being in outer space, but there was no stars, there was nothing. And it was a most disconcerting feeling. And I began to realize that this nullification of the environment was caused by the fact that I was the being who was creating the environment that I perceived. That was a shocker for me. And at first, it kind of threw me into a tizzy, in which case I immediately created an environment for myself because it was too disconcerting. Now, I did this in a state in which I could see myself. So then I realized that I was looking at myself and probably creating even the body that I was observing about who and what I was. I tried to stop that thinking as well. That created, for a brief time, a look inside the part of my astral body that was this glamour that we're talking about. For the first time, I could see it clearly enough to see what it was doing and how it was working, etc. And I had read about glamour from sources, but never from the way I'm explaining it to you tonight, because they just didn't understand it. But it started to make a lot more sense. And so my astral body, which was all that was there, because virtually everything else around me was gone, my astral body was this conglomeration of energies, and I could observe what they were doing and how they were functioning. Also, I noticed that as I reduced the amount of energy going into the astral body or any reaction about it, the energies within the body actually slowed down and became quiescent. They didn't go away. You could still see them, but they became quiescent. And I felt an amazing level of calmness. At the beginning of this, I felt a fear of death, but I got over that after practice. And for a protracted period of time, I actually observed this state of complete solitude and peace without fear of death, and the recognition that my consciousness was fully intact, even though, for all intents and purposes, I could see a body, but it wasn't much of one. I was almost non-existent in form, and I was much closer to a state of being in spirit. Then I realized that this is a state of contemplative meditation, one of spiritual meditation that someone might achieve for weeks or months of practice in the physical world, and here I did it in maybe 30 minutes of time in the astral world. And that gave me a clue of why it's possible to become more spiritual more quickly in the astral world than the physical, because you don't have the bodies and energies that are so dense confusing you about who and what you really are. Well, anyway, I stayed in that state for, I don't know how long, but for a long time, because I wanted to see where it eventually, if at all, led me. And the thing that I most noticed is that it led me to a state that was far more mental or monastic. And in that process of mental state, I started to become more and more other or outside directed, looking to being of service to others, and almost having a compelling need to serve others. Not a desire, because it wasn't based upon a glamour, because I didn't have a thought about it. Instead, I had this this identification with other life outside of myself, and wanting to see that other life grow and become greater, rather than my own life. by becoming so self-forgetful, I also lost more and more of the fear of death, which was so profound at the beginning of this exercise that I'm telling you about in the astral world. Now, this is the first time I tried this. I did this a number of times. I don't want you to think I only did it the once, but the first time still sticks in my head. I guess that's a normal thing for everybody because it was so different. Of course, I eventually came out of that state and came back to the astral world that was there, projected by myself and all the other selves around me, including animals and plants that have some level of consciousness, and they do produce some effects in the astral world. But people produce the most amount of effect. There's no question of that. So all this produced this amazing, we'll call it epiphany, of who I was. And this is only like the probably the first few times I got into the astral world, and maybe the first five or six times I was ever in the tank. It was from these experiences that I'm telling you about that I changed. I mean, not because, a bolt of lightning came down or something like that, and I said, whoa, man, I've changed. But more incrementally, because I began to get some, or very small at that time, understanding of the universe around me. It was like veils were being lifted, including glamour, because glamour is a huge veil. And we'll talk more about that veil in a couple more minutes from now, but I just want you to realize that everybody could have the same experience I had. It would take much more time and a set of specific, we'll say, meditative meditations, but you could achieve the same results. And so, therefore, although it might take months to do what I did in minutes in the astral world, it could be done. And I know that because I eventually tried it in the physical world and found that it could be done. So, but it's a little easier once you've already done it. So it's a lot easier to do it in the first place. Sort of like, once you know how to do it, you know how to do it, and you can still retain it even when you come back to the physical world, although it just takes more time to do it here. And so that really changed a lot. Well, let me tell you, I'll give you a break. I'll give you a little rest at this point. I mean, I'm just laying it all out there today, aren't I? And I know, this is like, you know, for some people, you're going to probably think, oh, well, that guy's just delusional anyway, so there you go. Well, that's okay. You can think that. But this stuff can be checked out by you. You can check it out while you're physically here. You don't have to go to the astral world. Well, if you want to, you could try that, too. But the point is that this is stuff that you can verify for real. And if you think about it, it even makes sense to some extent. It'd be easier if you read some of the stuff I've written, try Life's Admitting, and see if it makes sense to you. But even if you don't, you can experiment with this stuff yourself. I thought tonight I'd talk about Vaichi Jizik. I'm using it myself at the present time. I kind of got a shoulder out of whack. I was doing a lot of exercising, which is okay, I guess. You know, exercise is great, provided you don't do it too much. And I was doing it at levels that years ago was thought to be okay, including using heavier kinds of weights and things. Turns out those aren't so good for folks of my age, whatever that age is. And any age it may be too heavy for certain muscle groups. And so I kind of strained my shoulders, and especially my right shoulder, and did something that screwed up a tendon and then caused that tendon to become impinged on a nerve and some bone or whatever it's rubbing against. And that's causing some degree of discomfort. So I went to Brendan McCarthy, who's a natural medical doctor. I told you about him, Brendan. And he did check me out, and he says, oh, that's what it is. You've got a problem. You have an impinged problem. And your shoulder's out of whack, and it's a level two this or that. So now I'm going to have to do some exercises that are not going to be stressful. And taking the G-Sig, which reduces the pain significantly. Other than when I sleep, it's really almost unnoticeable. It's pretty good. Well, what is G-Sig? What is it doing in this case? Because here's a structural problem. You can look at my, literally, they did, through an MRI. You can look at my shoulder and you can say, wow, Look at that. He's got that goofy piece of tissue there that we refer to as a part of the shoulder, but it's still not working right. And it's a tendon. It isn't working right, or maybe a couple of them aren't working right. And you look at it and you say, well, that's a thing, right? Well, what's the real problem? Well, the real problem is that the center that that shoulder, in a minor sense, there's this minor center that's connected, a bunch of them, to the shoulder. Those centers are connected to a chakra, or one or more. In this case, the throat chakra is the biggie. And so the energy moving from the throat chakra to the shoulder and back again is not well balanced. And the jizik, when you take the jizik, the reason it gets rid of a lot of the pain is because it rebalances that energy. So some of the retained energy that's in the shoulder, literally it acts like retained energy. Your body doesn't want to move, your shoulder doesn't want to move right. When you do move it, it hurts. Some of that energy is sent appropriately to other centers from other minor centers. And the major center, the throat chakra in this case, tends to stop wobbling so much and starts picking up speed and running better again. And so the pain issue is reduced. We're dealing with the cause rather than the effect of the pain. You're not trying to deaden the divinic energies that send the messages. And the native system is saying, oh, things are feeling a lot better now. So it's all working better. And the shoulder is moving more freely, and there's an improvement. So taking the Pai Chi Jizik is causing an improvement in the shoulder. And that, in itself, is therapy. The thing is, I don't like it about it, is you have to take it all day long. I mean, even though the Jizik lasts 6 to 8 hours, you got to keep taking every 6 or 8 hours more of it. And I don't like doing it all the time. It kind of gets in the way of other things. But that's just part of the problem. You got to deal with it that way. The other thing that's needed is range of movement, range of motion, and it's got to be able to freely move in all directions without causing pain. And so that's where you get into practicing and getting the energy to work with the energy of movement. The energy of the nervous system has to also cooperate with the rest of the body that's in movement. So the two are coordinated, sound a little interesting, and produces more light in the body and reduces some of the darkness. And then we say that's a healing. That's how you heal things in this particular case. Haven't done it so much yet because I've got to learn all the different ways of movement. But it can start with just taking Pai Chi Jizik. So for those of you who say, well, I want to know why somebody who's really used this stuff and it's worked, well, that's a... I'm one of them folks right now. So you can get Pai Chi Jizik by calling this number, 602-431-5762. You can go to buyjizik.com, buyjizik.com, and find out more about it. Buy it if you want. Buy a bottle. And it's great stuff. It really does work. I can tell you that. Now, at the beginning of this process, I took a lot. And why do you need to take a lot? Well, more than it says so actually even on the bottle. But then it does say you can take more. You just should, you should be dealing with someone who understands what's wrong with your shoulder, et cetera, and so you don't just cover up the problem. And I did that. So I was responsible in the way that I used it. But I've used as much as double the normal amount because your body tells you how much to use. And until I'm moving enough of that energy out of there, I'm going to keep experiencing the pain. So I started moving some of the energy and stuff, feeling better. And I've been taking pretty consistently, instead of 8, about 12 sometimes. And that has been pretty effective. Really. Okay, so that's enough for talking about Jesus. Let's come back to the question of glamour. All right, the astral body, unlike the physical body, has some very strange things in it because the physics is different in the astral world. The quantum constant is larger. The larger the quantum constant, the more energy follows thought, and the more it is affected by the thought that you have. The astral world is huge in terms of its effect from thought. As I tried to explain, it's almost completely based upon thought, but it's astral thought, creative imagination. And if you limit the amount of creative imagination that is producing the world around you, you can, in the astral world, prove that to yourself. And in effect, that's how I first discovered the physics of the astral world, is by doing these experiments. Otherwise, I wouldn't have known the stuff I'm telling you. Because the books I read on it were too confused themselves to try to explain it. They talked about it in more mystical terms. Well, mysticism is great for some folks, and it doesn't work too good for me, because my mind isn't very mystical. And that's good, because I'm here to, part of my mission and my belief structure, is to demystify all this stuff so that you guys out there can understand it more easily as well. Mysticism can take lifetimes, and its accuracy is limited by the astral body itself, whereas demystifying is based upon the mental body and how well you exercise your mental thought. Well, that's a lot different than the astral issues. All right, so what can we do then to improve the astral illusion issues? I've given you some ideas about the problem. And let's start with the first gorilla in the room. And that is that you noticed I repeatedly stated that you can make astral glamours reduce. Reducing means like the itch that they cause, the desires that they cause are kind of reduced. The anxiety that they produce significantly is reduced. But they don't go away. Once you've created a glamour, there's only one way to get rid of it. And I'll explain why that's the case in a minute. But the only way you can get rid of it is to use that energy in a more enlightened way. And enlightening means godlike. Okay? So you have to be more spiritual in your life, in an astral sense, if you're going to get rid of glamours. You can't just get rid of them by doing some kind of reading or, astral calisthenics or something. None of that's going to work. You want to get rid of the glamours. You got to become more spiritual. And it has to be something that you actually use in service. Glamours don't go away just because you sit and meditate. I know that because I spent a lot of time meditating in the astral world, where it's much more effective than it is here. And they didn't go away. And I know they didn't go away because I could see them. They got smaller, quiescent. They got calmed down to the point where they really almost were unrecognizable as what you normally would consider glamours, but they were still there. So all the meditation that I could do would not get rid of the glamours. What got rid of them? Service. Got to take action. And you got to do it in a way that serves others, helps them to do the same. And usually it's co-service with God and others that are also co-serving with God collectively. When you do that, you can get rid of them. They actually turn into light. And instead of obstructing the sense, the feeling, from one center to the next, astral feelings, they encourage them. But they encourage them to become one-directional, where it doesn't go back and forth between the same center. That's what a glamour does really badly. But instead of it all moves to all the other centers in a balanced way, which we call love. Love. When it only goes to one center at a time, even though it balances the centers, we call that astral love. When it happens, there's another way to do it, though. Let me explain that. The astral body is sympathetic to the intuitional body, not the mental body. The mental body is masculine, the astral body is feminine, as I described in the beginning of the show. And it doesn't it isn't sympathetic to the vibration in the mental body. So if you really want to get rid of the glamours in service, the best way to do it is to use either uncontrolled or eventually controlled intuition. Once you get into that way of service, the astral body starts to enlighten, and the glamours start going away, and voila, you have a much more spiritual astral body. But it isn't done from just the mental side. This is the part that's so hard for people to understand. There's a number of yogas that were mental yogas. One of them was Raja Yoga. And the problem with Raja Yoga was that Patanjali, this is the guy who created it. He came up with this idea, why don't we think of ways of becoming much wiser and loving in the mental body, and maybe we can cause the astral body to become enlightened and not be causing the mental body to be pulled around, dragged around by how we felt, which was self-focused thought in the astral body. And what he discovered was amazing. That is that he couldn't achieve the results that he wanted with just mental thinking. That it required that a person eventually enter a state called samadhi, and in this state, people could, using the mental yoga, but eventually reaching a state of samadhi, could reach into their intuitional body for brief periods of time, and that caused enlightenment in the astral body, kind of roundabout, and that eventually led to a conditional form of love in the astral body, simultaneously with an unconditional form of love being developed intuitionally. And then instead of the energy going one at a time from one center to the next in the astral body, but balancing it still, it all happens at once. Boom. And it's all balanced instantly. Well, all at once is a big deal. And then you don't have just conditional astral love that you feel, but you feel this joy, which becomes kind of bliss love for all of God's creations and for God itself. This was the outcome of his yoga. It's good yoga, but it had this glitch in it that you had to reach the state of samadhi through following a whole bunch of very complicated mental gyrations, thoughts, and breaking a whole bunch of egotistical thinking. But it just never quite got off of the lower mental world, because it was all these lower thinkings, because people weren't attuned enough to the higher thinking of the mental body. Then the group I'm served with, and I came up with a plan of creating a yoga that would do something more, that would reach the samadhi state through conceptual understanding of how the mental body and the astral body work together and can work together, and breaking a thing called the kama manasa connection over time. This was an amazing thing, and it allowed the energies. I realize I'm skipping over most of the details about that, because that's not what tonight's show is about. And it allowed the body to start, the astral body, to start linking up all of these senses in the astral body with unconditional love instead of just conditional love. So you don't have astral love anymore. You have universal kind of love for all things. While the mental body became unified between the concepts and effects in it. See, in Raja Yoga, you're mostly dealing with the effects, not the concepts. So all kinds of neat things started to happen. So what I'm trying to get at here is that if you want the astral body to really be one heck of a great astral body, if you want to get rid of the glamours, and you want to get rid of them very quickly, then you need to start using your Buddhic body, usually by serving in your higher mental body. Serving means not meditating in, as Raja Yoga says, Serving means actual use in service. And then it just becomes a body of service, and the body that you start thinking from is your intuitional, and then you get these magical things. And these states of samadhi become just a normal way of existing. It's a truly amazing thing. All right, that's pretty far out there. Some of you are going to go, what is he talking about? This is way too far beyond me. Okay, I agree. Some of the stuff is maybe not right for tonight's show, but I just thought I'd throw it in there anyway. What the heck? And so, glamour in the astral body needs to get, you have to serve. And a service does mean that there has to be activity that is intelligent activity, that provides others with the ability to use their activity better and better. Not your own, but others. That's how you have to serve. Now, this is no easy thing. I don't want you to think, oh, gee, I have to snap my fingers and do it. No, this is probably going to take a long time. The reason you want to do it while you're physically alive, by the way, is that although it's very hard to feel while you're physically alive, there's a higher degree of separation between feelings and your physical activities. Once you go to the astral world, you can only project how it might affect you in the physical world because you're no longer alive in most circumstances, unless someone's astral traveling. And so this is the time right now to try to do this, because you gain much more by the existence of having feelings while you're still physically alive, and you can directly test whether what you're doing is making any sense and working. Otherwise, you're kind of shooting in the dark once you get to the astral world, because you don't know whether it's going to enlighten your physical body in your next life or not. So this is the time to be doing it. It's right now. The other thing that you're trying to do, we're all born with this thing, and almost all people are born with a thing called the kama-manasa connection. What's that? Just a fancy word for meaning that you feel first and then think second in your mental body. Feel in your astral body and then think in your mental body. That's kama, is feeling, manasic is mental. And this is a very bad way to exist, because it allows us to become darker and darker every time we do this. It's not the way spirit thinks. It's the way, we'll call it, energy thinks. It means that the lower is controlling, and evolutionary energy is controlling us more than spiritual thinking is. And for a lot of people, this is a very detrimental experience for them, yet they do it all the time. For spiritually disciplined people, it becomes an obstacle to service eventually. And so you want to get rid of it. And that gets rid of the glamours. The thing that gets rid of glamours also breaks, over time, breaks apart the kama-manasa connection. The less glamoured you are, the less you have going on in this kama-manasa connection. Now, can you break, or get rid of, I should say, all of the glamour and still have a kama-manasa connection? No. If you get rid of all your glamour, you don't have a kama-manasa connection. Can you get rid of the kama-manasa connection when you serve and still be affected by glamour? Yes. That you could have. And as a matter of fact, it's almost certainly going to happen that way for most people. So even though you break the connection, you still have some glamours that come in and interfere on occasion, and not all the glamours are gone just because you've broken the connection. But breaking the connection is a huge improvement in the ability to serve from the mental body, creating love wisdom. Really big deal. Very hard to do, and for most people it means getting past the beginning of the third initiation, and having taken it and passed the second. It's a big deal. That's a huge step. If you can get there, it's amazing. Glamours stand in the way of this. You could still be glamoured and break the kama-manasa connection. You could be glamoured until the day that you enter the next kingdom. But the point is that as the glamours reduce, your ability to serve improves better and better, and your sense of well-being improves, sense of death diminishes rapidly, anxiety reduces. You become a different person. So it's good to have it. While you're trying to break the karma monadic connection, anxiety may go up. Now, why would that be? Well, if you're trying to break it, the glamours that you're trying to get rid of become more energized by the fact you're trying to get rid of them. Just the thought about them gets it more active. So people who are trying to break the karma monadic connection develop more anxiety and tension in their astral and then eventually their physical bodies. This may lead to illnesses and other problems. But it's necessary to kind of put up with that because there's no way to try to get rid of glamours without putting some attention on them, which will cause them to become more unwieldy and put more of their energy into the astral body itself, producing this unfounded and difficult anxiety. It's something you got to put up with if you're going to do this kind of advanced stuff. Not everybody's going to who's listening to me tonight, but I thought I'd throw it in there too for those who it applies to. You see, glamour is tricky stuff. It's not easy to deal with this particular illusion. And let's talk about feeling now. The sense of feeling that most people experience is the separated senses in the astral body, sometimes joined with one, two, three, or four other of the astral senses. But seldom are all seven astral senses being used and being used in a balanced way. Because then you'd be in a state of samadhi and you'd be doing this perfect service. So samadhi just means effortlessly using the energy with no thought of the energy onto yourself at all. That's the reason it's effortless, because you don't produce any forces. That's what samadhi means. So ultimately, this is a tricky thing, because when someone is saying to themselves, well, gee, I want to get rid of all my glamours, or I don't have any of this stuff really affecting me, their own feelings kind of defeat them at times, because they want to feel what they're feeling, but they're still feeling illusion until they use all seven of their feeling of their centers together, and the feeling becomes all part of God. It's a godly feeling. It has that common denominator, and you truly then are thinking in spiritual terms. This is very, very difficult. So most people, when they say, gee, I can feel this, or I can feel that, or I feel love and I don't feel that, they're feeling only pieces of the real feeling the astral body has, or could have, if all seven senses were feeling equally and at the same time together. That's what you want to achieve. That causes unification of the astral senses, which is the goal to become godly, is to become unified in your sense. Not get rid of the senses. This is a mistake. People say, oh, well, you really want to get rid of your feelings. No. Just the opposite. When you join together the feelings, they become much stronger, not weaker. You don't get rid of your feelings. Some people say, oh, well, if I really become like an advanced being, I won't love anybody anymore in any specific way, because that feeling goes away. No. All individual sense remains, but it becomes part of the bigger sense you love in a different way, a bigger way, never losing anything. Consciousness is never lost. It's only added to and gained in greater and greater amounts. So you want to try to unify the senses in the astral body. Very difficult to do, by the way. And you can do this a little bit at a time. First thing you want to develop is empathy. Empathy is the five lower senses of form in the astral body. They do not include the spiritual sense of understanding God or the spiritual sense of how to create more of God astrally. Both of those are missing. But empathy is still a great thing. It tells you how others are feeling in their lower five senses of feeling. It just doesn't include their heart or crown centers in their fullness of spiritual development. You may sense what those centers feel in very minimal, only in physical, or not physical, only in
energy terms, but you don't get the spiritual content of the centers. There's two parts to a center. There's the energy part, which gives you an energy sense, and then there's the spiritual part, which gives you a spiritual sense. When you use them both together, you get the full content. A lot of people, they don't use the heart or crown centers spiritually, virtually at all, so they only have the energy part to have any understanding about. Which means they sort of have a warm feeling for love for some things that are similar to them. Similar to animals, by the way. And they have an understanding of how to do something that is in a minimal surface way to make others feel good, do things for them that makes them feel good. But they can't understand how to be God, feel what God is feeling about life, and then help other life to feel the same thing. Because they're not using those two senses in truly spiritual ways. They're using it more as physical or energy senses, not physical, but energy senses, rather than spiritual senses. Got to bring the two together. So most people don't use those senses correctly, and they are left mostly with just empathy. When you put the other two senses together, they produce super empathy. They produce super empathy together, and then if you join them with empathy, then the super empathy and the empathy become just more super empathy. Then you're in real service using your astral body. It's a wonderful thing, by the way. That's a really great thing. In order to get rid of all glamour, you must unify all senses in the astral body, as I just described, and you need to do it for a minimum of about no less than a couple days straight. Didn't sound like much, right? A couple days. Hey, pack it, a couple days. Most people can't do a couple minutes. A couple days is like way out there. If you could do that consistently while you're physically alive, and you also unify your mental and your physical senses, you would instantly become your soul. You would, and your soul itself would become liberated into being a liberated soul in the next kingdom. It's such a big deal. No, we can't just do it by some reading some book or listening to me on the radio or any of that stuff. This can only be done through lifetimes of service. Yeah, you could do it in 2 days. If you can serve in every way possible, perfectly, for 2 days, you can actually achieve this. Give or take an hour or two. It takes a couple days, and you can actually do it. In esoteric terms, sometimes it's talked about being able to be done in 7 lifetimes, or sometimes 7 something. But all of that is really just more kind of mumbo-jumbo. The truth is that if you really use your senses unified, fully unified in the astral body, you would get rid of all your glamour. That would perfect the astral body because it would have no more illusion. And once you did that with the other two bodies and then joined the three bodies together in some level of service, again for a couple of days, the results would be absolutely amazing. That's where the 7 days comes from, but in case you didn't know that. You get 2 days for the astral, 2 days for the physical, Tuesdays for the mental, and then I guess the one day is the unifying of all the days, or it's instantaneous anyway, and that could be the completion of the 7. But the point is that, again, that's more of a mystical interpretation. The truth is, it's about unifying the bodies and making yourself into the one in the three lower worlds. The lowest ones we live in, of course, are the mental, astral, and physical. When we unify those bodies, we enlighten the whole dimensionality of those worlds and become part of God here. And we then no longer are human. Humans are always imperfect in those ways that I just described. But when you do this sort of thing, you become superhuman. You become a living soul. And your soul itself becomes living in another dimension than the monastic. So great things take place. You have that as an opportunity and something to think about. But for most of us, that's very far off. So what are we going to do? In the meantime, you can lessen the amount of glamours you have. May not get rid of all of them for a while. And you can reduce the ones that you do have in terms of their strength. Because remember, this glamour gets stronger as you think more illusioned about it, and then it bounces back and forth and inside and out of your astral body, creating all kinds of anxieties, blocking the communication of feeling, so you don't feel very much about others or in any way, in any sense or form. And your empathy diminishes rapidly. So you can just reduce the number and then the amount that the remaining glamours exist. How much glamour does someone have? Thousands of individual glamours, if you were to define them clearly. But they join together in groups, oftentimes of dozens at a time. So it's very hard to say, in any very definitive way, how many glamours someone has. But the total amount of astral illusion is immense. The amount of feeling that is cut down for most people is probably in the high 90 percentile, 96, 97, 98% of the feelings that they have while they're physically alive. They don't feel. They're blocked by their own glamours. Now, another thing about glamours is every time they come up, they're like an itch, as I said towards the beginning of the show. And they are sometimes called fixed desires. It's a desire to get something that is selfish. It's about yourself. One of the ways you can train yourself to try to locate and get rid of glamours is by finding out how many fixed desires that you have. And by recognizing them, best to do so when the desire is not at hand. So reflection is a good way to determine this. While the glamour is actually stimulating your astral body and giving you a bunch of false feelings, which become fixed desires, desires that are oftentimes very selfish, irrational, they have nothing to do with the moment in terms of any service towards anybody, and they usually don't even deal with what's really going on around you. But even if they do deal with what's going on around you, they have nothing to do with service to others. Then, that being the case, when it's active, it controls you too much to be able to try to inactivate it, reduce it, and to eventually use that energy in service. So once it's active, you almost have to take precautions to not try to not get it active. And once it's active, you need to try to reduce your contact with the circumstances that are producing the desire, as best as you can. Then you can do something about it when the desire is reduced, because at that point you have the best opportunity to change the glamour using creative imagination into something that is serving others, that is at least conditional in love with others, and eventually gets to an unconditional state where you start functioning more of a soul. By using many more of your feelings together in a balanced way between your centers, you then start getting rid of the glamour instead of just reducing it. So the way to locate glamours is by locating desires. What do you desire? That leads you to the glamour, or usually it's a group of glamours, that you're going to be dealing with. And that's how you locate them. It's like we all have the universal locators, and we can use them. Fascinating. And the more that you locate them, the more you need to make notation about them, either mentally or in some cases, for some people, it helps to write them down. So that you know that certain circumstances causes them to become active. Then when you do put yourself in those circumstances, you can beforehand prepare yourself by thinking of more service-related ways of dealing with the energy that is in the glamour. It's through your service to others, and particularly with others, if it's co-service, like in a spiritual group setting, that you can reduce these glamours. That's the answer. You can actually get rid of them you can reduce their overall effect on you just by doing the exercises of reflection and contemplation, and then making notation and educating yourself about when these are coming up and making it very difficult for you to feel the way that you should be feeling. Now, what are other ways of determining that you have a glimmer? Well, when you have a feeling that is a negative feeling, I have negative feelings all the time. We all do. But the thing is, you want to bring them to the forefront. So you talk about them to yourself. You can talk about them to other people. Some people may not understand you and they think you're crazy, but by you bringing them up, it actually is a way of showing to them and to you, the humble one, that you have these. And it's a way of gaining control over them rather than losing control. Other people may not understand that and think you're a nut. But the point is that it is a solution. And it is a way to get to some of the deeper, more hidden glamours. Okay, so basically, you follow your feelings. You can check your feelings out. Is this making you angry? Is this making you fearful? Is this making you hostile, selfish in various ways? Negative, hurtful, controlling. All of those things are connected to some glamours. Yeah, they really are. It's a little hard for us to understand that because most people say, well, that's just how I feel. What's wrong with that? Well, nothing, as long as you don't mind having a lot of glamours that are going to wreck you up pretty bad. But if you're trying to change the situation, then feelings become a very important element. Now, one of the feelings is the desire. So desires are the feeling of having a glamour. Another feeling of having a glamour is the result of the desires not being met, which is called anxiety. Okay? And then if you repress the anxiety, then you get depressed. Yep. And approached desires, which are oftentimes fed by angers, cause more depression than avoidance desires, which are usually caused by fears. So people get more depressed when they repress their angers than when they repress their fears. Why is that? Because an approached desire has more energy to it, so you have to repress harder, which causes more depression. A fearful desire, there are fearful desires, believe it or not, to protect yourself, to get away from all the aggravation, whatever. Even the desire to vacate and have vacation, to go have fun. Those are fearful desires. Those desires have connected to them, then, an avoidance. You're really avoiding something, even though you say, I'm going to go have fun today. It's really avoiding the things that you don't want to have fun with. Or you're not having fun with. You see what the point I'm getting at. And so, those when you repress them takes a lot less energy, so you will get less depressed. But there is a penalty, and there's no question there's a penalty in either case. Penalty when you try to avoid fear, the fear itself becomes more pressing later on. So every time we avoid a fear and repress it, the repression is critical, the fear grows because the fear becomes part of the clamor, the desire. And we become more fearful in the same circumstances the next time. Then eventually you can become neurotic. That's what happens when people become neurotic. And you have high levels of anxiety because you're constantly trying to repress more and more fears. Repressing angers, which is an approach response, causes depression to develop more rapidly. What is the depression? The person feels that they are frozen. They can't do what they want to do, and they become even further angry. So repression of anger causes more anger, but that anger is not felt. You don't feel the anger. It just has a hold on you. This is kind of esoteric psychology time right now. So glamours are really poisonous things because we can now see that they're affecting us psychologically, causing what I call to be, in psychology terms, emotional disease. Glamours eventually lead to these things called emotional diseases because the response to a glamour, one way or another, is ultimately a negative, destructive effect on the astral body, which leads to states of depression, sets of fears, or a combination of two, which leads to paranoia, and on and on and on. Those are just some of the things. What about the anxiety stimulating the body? Well, that leads to what is known as the energizing of compulsive disorders. Still all caused by glamours. All caused by the illusion in the astral body itself. So you become obsessive compulsive, you become depressed, you become a neurotic, fearful person with phobias. I mean, all this stuff happens because of this one goofy thing about astral energy and the way it responds in our body and produces these fixed desires. Now, if you have some of these emotional disease symptom things that I'm talking about, you can just try to deal with them psychologically speaking, or a more significant improvement can happen through looking at it in a spiritual way. It helps if you could go to see someone who uses both psychology, so to speak, and a spiritual understanding. Very few of those people know. But the reason is that you're dealing then with the real cause of the problem. And you're doing something to change the real cause of the problem, which is a lack of service. Right? Don't serve. You're not spiritual enough in your life. You produce these effects. There's a relationship, though, between your ability to serve and how much you do serve. If you're, the more you're able to serve, and the less you are, the greater the effect of the fixed desire is on your astral body. Now, why is that? Well, with more ability, you have more energy. Ability is just what is known in, when converted into an action. It is the potential to take action. That's what ability is. And if you have a high potential to take action, and you're repressing that, and you have a lot of fixed desires to take action that you're repressing, the results are that you're going to have much higher levels of anxiety than an average person, and you're going to do more destruction to your feelings so that they get goofed up more, to your senses, I should say, which goofs up your feelings more. And then the results are really a misperception about your entire world. So people with greater ability that don't love, as I put it, or aren't using their astral bodies in ways that is in service to others, they create worse problems for themselves than those who are less capable. I went through that rather quickly, and I'm looking at the clock. I don't have time to go back over that again. But I do want you to realize that this is a little more complicated. You might want to read Life's Hidden Meaning and think about it. But it will help you to get some bearings on the problem, that if you are a more capable person, you have more problems to contend with if you're also selfish. Don't think it's a gift to have capabilities that you're selfish with. The results will be disastrous in the long run. You see. All right, so the fixed desires that we sense in ourselves need to be diminished and eventually gotten rid of through service. The diminishment, though, does not require service. It does require education and meditation, along with a good deal of will and the desire to improve yourself for the sake of serving others at some point in the future. So as long as you do that, you can diminish the effects of the glamours in your astral body. And that's a good place to start for some people. If your capability is much greater than that because you've already done some of this or you're just more capable for whatever reason, then just doing that alone will not necessarily be of great benefit. Then you've got to do more or else you will pay the consequences of all the things I just talked about. It is important to realize you're not going to get over every fixed desire that's inside of you overnight. It's not going to happen. It's tough to get rid of one or two in a day or two. And we have thousands. So you figure it out. That's years and years and years of time to take to get rid of everything. And that's if you're really diligent about it. And if you're working in co-service with others, it goes a lot faster, tremendously faster. And if you're doing so as selflessly as possible, that also adds a tremendous amount of impetus to the whole speed at which you're going to improve yourself. But you can't be doing it to improve yourself. You need to do it with the motive to be of service to others. Too many people get caught in that problem, and then they don't get better in terms of the fixed desires. They just develop a new, bigger one of being, quote-unquote, the spiritual person they know themselves to be. Yeah. And you get all full of yourself because you're a spiritual person, and that's your grammar, you see. You're still fooling yourself, in other words. The final way to judge the issues of glamour, besides fixed desires and feelings and how much emotional damage you've done and other issues, the final way is by getting feedback from others. This is another reason to be part of a spiritual group or connected to one in some way. It's so hard for us to be objective about who we are. Because of these glamours, they fool us. Because we don't have a clear sense of super empathy. We're missing it. We need to allow ourselves to be humbled so that we can listen to the way others perceive us. It is with humility that we can gain this very important element. If you're not humble, you won't hear others. Even if you're part of a spiritual group, it won't do you any good. Because you're too selfish to take in what others are letting you know about, you may even be very defensive about it. Remember, defenses to fixed desires is really just an increase in the desire every time you use the defense. Okay, so if we're going to go to the final solution is humility. Why? Because when a person is humble, they, at that point, take on, in a kind of super empathic way, the position of the other person. They have to, because they're denying their own right to have their own centered position. They're assuming the other person's position is correct, and they need to understand the other person so they can improve themselves. If they find out in that improvement that the other person needs something from them to understand more, then they can help try to help the other person. But they have to start with humility no matter what. And this is a difficult pill to swallow for a lot of people. Because, well, I know I'm right, so I should have to do that. Well, then you're wrong. You're not right. Because you're not humble. And if you can't be humble, then you are the biggest desire of all is controlling you, which is the desire to be right. Oh, I'm right. Why is that such a big desire? Because it's the desire that feeds the personality the most. Personality is the part of us that's subconscious and that is unaffected by the glamours that it produces for the self. It doesn't care about it. So that's your problem. You're conscious up there. I'm not conscious. I'm subconscious. These glamours don't really bother me. They give me control over everything, and I like having control. That's the cool thing about it. The more glamours I have, the more I feel in control. And I like that feeling because then I don't feel like I'm going to die. I'm in control. I'll be demanding and selfish and do what I want. Personality. Personality wants to be right because it wants to be in control. It can't be in control if it believes that it is incessantly in a state of potentially being wrong, which is humility. If you want to get out from under a serious problem with glamours, humility is the bottom line answer. The other things I talked about have to be adhered to, too. Don't think you can get away with just being humble, because you won't be. You'll even think you're wonderful because you're being humble, which is definitely not a state of humility. Okay. You following the paradox there? All right. So, humility is the bottom line. To get there, you need to do all the other things I talked about for almost this last hour here, because to get there is so hard. You don't get humility by just saying, oh, I think I'll be humble for the next 24 hours. That'll be easy. Yeah, I don't need to be right, because I'm already so right, I don't need it anymore. I'm right about everything anyway. Yep. You can see how this is a toxin. It's very hard to get rid of. All right. So I hope we've come, we're almost out of time. We've come a long way in discovering that to get out of the glamours that we have, you really need to become a much more spiritual person. Otherwise, they're going to control you. And in controlling you, they eventually destroy how you feel, your ability to feel, how you feel, in an accurate sense. And they destroy your life in an astral sense. So hopefully this has made some sense to you. And we are out of time. So I want you to think about this. If you're going to try to do any of the things I said in tonight's show, please re-listen to the show as soon as it gets up there. Too much, too fast. I know it was a lot. But until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is. Thank you.